Hey everybody, this is the Video Dave's Podcast. This is our chance to talk to you about our feelings of video games. My name is Annie.
And I'm Kate.
And we have strong feelings this week about our month. Here, hold on. Let me back up a sec. So we had just kind of recorded the first installment off the cuff, feel out the space a little bit, see how we felt doing it, and now we're considering doing this monthly. So be sure to reach out and let us know. And if so, this month we're going to start out by discussing Dragon Age.
All three of them, ideally. Oh, and we should say, you know, these are predominantly, at least the way I play them, sort of narrative games, so we'll be spoiling everything.
Absolutely everything.
Yeah, everything.
Toe
yeah.
to tip.
Yep. Toe to tip, for sure. And, you know, the games kind of touch on some sort of darker moments and whatnot, so.
Yeah, Dragon Age, bless them, deals with a lot of upsetting content. From the very micro to me, an arachnophobe, they explore that space thoroughly. And to the macro of issues of genocide and assault, we will be discussing those things, albeit lightly, just as a heads up to anyone who might have trouble hearing those issues.
Sure, yeah. And mostly talking about probably Inquisition, but some of the earlier games as well. Some of the earlier games being 1 and 2, I guess.
Yeah. Our relationship to Dragon Age as a franchise, I think it's safe to say, is a little different.
Yeah, because I just cringed when you said franchise.
Yes, I'm sorry, I used that the F word,
the
there.
IP. Any of that stuff. But there's no other way to sort of talk about it. That's how they refer to, that's how these big video game sort of stuff refers to themselves. So
Yeah, and there are some, what's a phrase I can use that's less obnoxious? I'm not going to say brand, that's worse.
Yeah.
There are, as Kate mentioned, we're mostly going to be approaching these as stories and as for characters from that point of view. We'll be touching on gameplay and aesthetics and everything, but that's where we react most strongly to this series. Here, I'll say series. There we go.
Yeah, okay, that works.
My relationship to Dragon Age is that I hated Dragon Age Origins. I didn't hate it. It did not woo me the way I expected it to. Wait, I'll say that.
Well, let's back up a second. How would you describe Dragon Age from the jump?
You know, that's actually part of why it turned me off.
Okay.
It is ultimately, I would describe it as a postmodern fantasy series. Like, it's trying very much so to be conscious of and a reaction to a lot of the tropes in fantasy, in shared kind of Tolkienian fantasy. Like, right off the old dome is that the elves in Dragon Age, rather than being like, you know, respected, venerated, ethereal creatures, are instead like the lowest classes and most disrespected and enslaved. And
well, you just sort of dove into the deep end there.
Well, yeah, but it's like that. It's like it feels very much so like someone like these folks held up fantasy and looked at it from every angle, and then tried to deconstruct it a little bit, but also just straight up building a good old fashioned fantasy world.
Mm-hmm. So if I was to describe Dragon Age, I would say it's a medieval-esque fantasy game with all the, you know, high fantasy tropes of dragons and demons and things like that, taking place on a magical, fantastical map that is clearly not Earth. I mean, when you're first introduced to it, it's like through the storyline of the Blights.
Dragon Age Origin starts off by introducing you to this world with these varied peoples and cultures in a moment of crisis. The Blight is coming, which some folks are disbelieving of, and what the Blight is in this world is basically the... Woof, Kate, don't judge me if I pitch this wrong, but the creatures, the demons and devils that have been hiding below the earth are going to come bursting forth and devour the earth.
Yeah. Sort of muck it up, taint it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Just kind of make it an unpleasant place.
Exactly. Dragon Age Origins does a really fascinating thing where they decided to tell this story literally from different perspectives, where Dragon Age Origins had, I think, was it? Let me think. The two dwarven origins.
Mm-hmm.
There was
two
elven, and then there was two human. Am I missing something?
You know what? I'm going to be completely honest. I played Dragon Age Origins twice, And both times I didn't make it all the way to the very end. I played the Dalish Origin and I played, I think, just a human noble.
Yeah, yeah. Dragon Age Origins bounced right off of me. I don't know why. I think it was so lore dense from the start.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I traditionally don't really necessarily like fantasy for the sake of fantasy. This is something that has changed now in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely at the time, I would have qualified myself as an elf racist.
I think you still don't like elves. Even just,
they're even still recently. Not my favorite.
Yeah. Every time we talk about elves, it's always like, And I love them so much. I love elves. Every time I have to play any sort of like fantasy game, more or less, I always shoot for the elves. I mean, not Warcraft. I played Taurens, but
I am definitely, I'm still struggling in my elf feelings. But when the one time that I really put my heart into Dragon Age Origins, I chose the Dalish elf origin because I thought that was such a good motivating point for a character.
Mm-hmm. Did you like it?
I mean, I really liked that origin a lot. I felt that there was a little bit of a gulf between the anger that I felt as that character and the anger I was allowed to live out in the narrative.
You know what? Bit. That's something that I've run into a little bit. I didn't think we were going to bust in on this early, but sometimes, like I say, I always play elves because I love them. But it's hard when... You know, I love Dragon Age, and I know a lot about it. You know, I was given the World of Thedas books as a present for Christmas. And so, you know, I kind of got deep into the background of it. But sometimes, like, you'll know a thing, and you know that your elf would know that thing, but you're not given a venue to say it. Like, there's a moment where if you're playing, not Trespasser, but you're playing the Dragon Age Inquisition, and you find an elven temple at the end. And if you're playing a Dalish elf, you kind of just sort of wander through the space being like, my clan believes this, I guess, sort of thing. Like, mm-hmm. it's, I know why you have such limitations, because just... You know, the flow chart behind that must be massive at that point. But it would be nice to be like, you know, actually that's Mythal, or actually, you know, just kind of be an elf nerd about it in the moment. And you're not really, from time to time, like, you'll see like the little, dwarf or human or elf icon appear in your dialogue tree. And you just, you know, if you're like me, you just sort of mash it because, you know, of course, you know the names of all the elven pantheon. Of course you do. Why wouldn't you? You're an elf.
Yeah. Yeah, I think sometimes one of the amazing things about Dragon Age Origins was that you could have all of these different starting points, mm-hmm. But they all kind of more or less have to, because that's how the way games work, you know, just to keep everybody's brains from flying off, funnel you down more or less the same track.
Mm-hmm.
And Beatrix was the name of the classic elven name Beatrix was my elf in Dragon Age Origins. And she's so angry that her origin, for those of you who don't remember this, because it's etched in my heart, it's actually one of the few things that game I really remember, is some elf racists go and disrupt her wedding day, and her gentleman friend is killed, and from there her adventure begins.
I have to interject. You didn't play the Dalish elf, you played the city elf.
Excuse me, you're absolutely correct. I was the city elf. Excuse me.
I'm sorry. Carry on?
No. I love you. Absolutely. I was not Dalish. Absolutely. I was the city elf. But I found that very cathartic. Mm-hmm. I like one of the ideas that Dragon Age plays with, and we'll probably get more into this a little later, the idea of losing your cultural identity and becoming something new. And something new and young.
I mean, there's a thing too where, like, when you start making something, Dragon Age Inquisition and especially Trespasser and Haken and all the DLC that comes later on, it's, you know, the bones of it were there in Origins, but it feels like they sort of found their feet and kind of found a way to push into a direction that was more unique. Origins feels a little bit more broad, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then by the time you get to the ones that have just released, it feels not more authored, but more focused in the aesthetics that it's sort of chosen to pick up on. I noticed that too. I mean, the origins being a little bit more, I really don't want to say generic, but
sure, they're finding their way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's hard. It's hard to do that when you're writing anything, and it's hard to do that when you're making a game. It takes a long time to find what's unique and what's interesting and special about a project. And I mean, like I say, I mean, you could do that with your NaNoWriMo, or you could do that with a video game franchise or whatever series over 10 years. Mm-hmm. But I am with you in that I have a greater fondness for the later work than I do for the earlier.
Yeah,
but
I think
it's also, you know, I was maybe in a different place back then too, you know.
Definitely. Like, I admit that it was genuinely that, yeah, I didn't have space in my heart for Dragon Age, but when Dragon Age Origins came around, I like, the extent of my attachment was, I like knights, I like people with swords, all right, and that was kind of the extent of my emotional connection at the time. But when Dragon Age 2 came around, speaking of, like, focus, what I find really fascinating from Dragon Age Origins to Dragon Age 2 to Dragon Age Inquisition is that it just does genuinely feel like Dragon Age Origins was the macro, and Dragon Age 2 was the micro and very focused. And then between the two, they found this middle ground in Inquisition that I think really paid off. And you couldn't have gotten there had they not made those two steps along the way.
Yeah, the scope of the first of Origins and then of Inquisition are so world-altering. The stories and whatnot of two are just so small and intimate, and I wonder, will they ever go back to doing a small intimate game like that, or are all Dragon Ages going forward going to be, you know, the world is in peril again?
Yeah, I mean, I am absolutely 100% a Dragon Age 2 apologist. I love Dragon Age Inquisition, and I've played it more than any other Dragon Age game, and it took me from being I like Dragon Age 2, I love Dragon Age, I'm gonna get Grey Warden stickers for my things, you know?
Yeah.
But Dragon Age 2, in so many ways, that intimacy spoke to me so much, and I liked that kind of narrow focus, and I liked the things they were trying to do. I know folks are so critical of, you know, reusing maps and, like, that more narrow focus and that you don't get to travel the world as much. And, like, but those are ideas that I really, really liked. It was, you know, it wasn't so much about the world as much as it was about your actual family and then the family that you build and those relationships changing over time
or
and deepening over
not
time.
Not changing, because I got Fenris in my party and never used him. And didn't really, because I was so busy. I knew that if you didn't rivalmance or romance Isabella, she'll betray you at the end. Because that's, you know, straight up, that's what I'd heard. So I was focused all my attention on Isabella. So I ignored Fenris. And then at the end, I don't know if you know this, but if you don't do anything with Fenris, he betrays you and you have to murder him.
Really?
Yeah. So, and they kind of pin you in this courtyard. And he starts attacking you, and I realized he basically just turned into a mob. And I was just running around the courtyard just shouting, like, I don't want to kill you. You're supposed to be my friend. But, I mean, you can't leave, and you can't enter into any sort of character moment, so you just basically have to cut down Fenris before you can continue with the rest of the game. So, yeah. And, I mean, in 3, I really didn't do much with Sarah either, so when you get to her title card, she just bailed on me at the end. So, like, it's, you know, sometimes you will make all these great friendships, and sometimes it's just people just, you know, cut out if you're lazy, I
guess.
Well,
I will say, one of the things that I really love about talking to people about their experiences with Dragon Age games is, and to some, Mass Effect is similar to some extent, where the things that are important to them in that game, and I'm specifically talking about character and narrative moments, but, like, the things that resonated with them and are really meaningful to them are things that either were not present in someone else's game or just was not their focus. And so it's like you're talking to someone who genuinely is, like, experienced some sort of parallel world to yours. Or like, what do you mean Krem's dead?
Yeah.
What do you mean? You know?
Or Alistair's gone, or Loghain's still in your party or whatever.
God, Loghain. I forgot Loghain existed until I was looking at her notes this morning. I was reading something where Logan can show up in Inquisition, depending on how, I think it was, depending on how things went. And I was like, who kept Logan? In whose world is Logan still a going thing?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
Forgetting that the Alan Rickman kissers of the world want to keep Logan around.
Who did you like and who didn't you like, companion-wise?
In the first game, or like just globally,
yeah.
I, the thing about Dragon Age is that I don't have many characters that I dislike. I bare minimum like all of them, and there are a few that I love. There are only a few that I... And frankly, over the course of the games, because some of the characters they've kept and evolved, I now find them much more interesting. Like, Leliana has had such kind of an interesting character growth over the games that I now am much more interested in her than I was in Origins. I don't know, Kate, who do you dislike in Dragon Age?
Well, I mean, like we mentioned, like, the first time around, I just didn't, you know, do anything with Sarah. I played 2 really late, like, years after it had come out. Mm-hmm. And I'd heard that if you play a lady and romance Anders, he's really cloying, and, like, he'll just kind of be like, let's get married. He's basically just, he comes at you quick and is really sort of, like, needy in a way. And I was like, okay, I want to play it, and I want to romance him, but I'm going to play as... This isn't actually answering your question, by the way. But I'm going to play it as a male hawk in Romance Anders. And it's the same romance, but the context of it changes, and which is really interesting. And I still didn't like him, I guess. But at the same time, I was... You know, I'm sort of sympathetic to... to his causes and things, to the mage plight. So I guess Anders and Sarah are probably my least favorites.
I feel like kind of a betrayal of Lady Dragon Age fans, and that I don't like Anders because I know he is such a romantic hero to so many people. Yeah. But I find That's him such right. a big wiener. He's not my dude.
Sure. Well, he's not your cup of tea. I understand. I mean,
what I love about Dragon Age is that there's so many cups of tea there that, like, I genuinely had the moment of, oh yeah, Anders exists, right? Just now.
Yeah, sure.
Even though he's a huge part of that game, and I love what they did with him in that game.
Yeah, I do too. I'm with you. I've heard nothing but, like, either you, like, really love Anders, or you, like, really, like, just, no thanks, bye boy, sort of thing. But I really like Cassandra. I think she's really interesting and says
God,
things
I love
that,
Cass.
Yeah, she says things I don't normally hear in video games. And don't normally hear from, like, lady characters. And that she, a lot of the things that she said, I found myself just filled with gratitude. You know, when she sort of tells someone off for, like, I can read a romance novel, like, cool it sort of thing. You know, don't give me a hard time about this. It was like, yeah, absolutely right. You know, it was nice.
But also, at the same time, feeling blushing and embarrassment about being caught reading a romance novel.
Yeah, no, it's such an interesting, like, it's an interesting feeling. I was thinking about this today because we were talking about, you know, doing this Dragon Age show. Back in the day, you know, I visit Portland a lot, and I have to fly a lot, and I always have connecting flights. So, because, you know, from Toronto to Portland, there's no direct flight. So, long story short, I picked up a book at Powell's when I was there, like, last year, and I felt really shy and kind of, you know, self-conscious because I bought a Dragon Age book. I bought The Masked Empire, and at the time I bought it, I felt kind of silly, but then... I'm trying to get over that feeling because it doesn't do any good. And also, like, that flight back that was so bad. And it was like, I was stuck in Chicago almost overnight. And I had this book with me and I was reading it and I was really having a nice time. And like, by the end of it, I was just like so grateful and so happy that I had picked up this book and it had just been such a good distraction. And it was like, I just genuinely enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So, like, to see that feeling of like gratitude and sort of self-consciousness depicted in a game is like pretty rare.
I Cass is one of my favorite video game characters of all time. I think I would go that far, just because she is so uncommon a character in that she's a pragmatic idealist, and that's like so interesting. And I liked her introduction in the games. Like in Dragon Age 2, she's the interrogator of the unreliable narrator of the game. Mm-hmm. I remember when I first heard she's gonna be one of our party members, are you kidding me? Her story in the world of Dragon Age is so interesting. And as a woman who always struggled with being kind of tomboyish and being told for a long time, oh, that means you're a lesbian, was so frustrated that just because I like these things and look like this doesn't mean anything about who I want to kiss or what I want to, who I want to be with, or even who I am in any real way. Mm-hmm. Cass meant a lot to me to be this tough, no nonsense, but very sweet and really romantic and eloquent and kind person who isn't necessarily gay, even at the same time where I'm like, okay, we have Cass, and my favorite character in Dragon Age 2 is probably Avalyn, and I'm like, okay, that's two straight butches, y'all. I'm tapping my watch here. Let's fix this up, fellas. Even as those meant a lot to me.
Who did you romance in any of the games?
In Dragon Age 2, I managed to romance
Fenris.
Well, here's the thing. I romanced Fenris and Isabella in a way that actually broke the end of the game, where when in the epilogue, when they're talking over like the end, he actually said both their names at the same time.
Oh, legitimately broke the game.
Yeah, I first wooed Fenris, then Isabella. Dragon Age 2, I played extensively with my wife, and part of my pleasure with it is how much joy we both found from it. We have a femhawk and a dudehawk. And Dudehawk romanced Isabella, and Femhawk romanced Isabella and Fenris. This is very interesting. Let me tell you about my dolls that kissed.
Essentially.
Fenris was really interesting because he kind of helped me get over my elf racism. And I genuinely mostly just liked him because I liked his design, which I'll just say is kind of silly back of math class doodles sort of. Dude is like, I'm gonna draw this sweet elf with all these tats. He's really angry, you guys. He's really angry, you know.
I romanced, like I said, I romanced Anders in 2, and in 3, the first time around, I romanced Josephine, mm-hmm. which is so sweet and so cute. Mm-hmm. Josie's really wholesome, I guess, in a way.
Yeah.
But then I did the really classic thing that I think a lot of people must do. And I would be interested to see the metrics on this. But I completed the game, saw the ending, booted up a new game, and started romancing Solas.
Yeah, I was curious. Even I, because I admit, when I was playing the game, when Solas first showed up, I don't think I could have rolled my eyes any harder if I tried.
Yeah, he was described to me as, I can't remember who said it to me, you know, Reddit over there.
Yeah, he seemed like, in so many ways, like this cartoon caricature of everything that I find obnoxious about elves in fiction. And in playing it through, I kept seeing these glimmers of a more interesting character, but I genuinely just did not really deal with him beyond a cursory level my first time through. And so by the time we get to the end of Dragon Age Inquisition, I was like, what just happened? Are you kidding me? And lost my business.
Yeah. No, I tried to be friends with him, because if only because, like, he's a painter and I'm a painter. Me in real mm-hmm. life, I'm a painter. Like, we can be friends through this.
Yeah.
But, you know, he doesn't really make it easy. I mean, you know what, he helped. I'm going to take that back. Some of his choices feel like all over the map until you kind of uh-huh. are kind of aware of the end. If you're a nice person and you choose, like, the nice person options, like, Varric is just going to like you. Like, Varric just likes everyone, but unless you're, like, mm-hmm. a total jerk. But with Solas, you have to be a little bit more, like, thoughtful in your choices, mm-hmm. it feels like. And it's hard to be thoughtful when you don't know some of the rules of the world. Until you do Absolutely. That second time around and you kind of have a greater sense of, like, what everyone's motivations are. And then you can kind of game the system. And be like, I feel like Solas would appreciate it if, you know, I helped this person in a way that they were still reliant on themselves. Or, you know.
It's interesting too with Dragon Age games, more so than any other BioWare game. I traditionally, I am a Mass Effect person. From the start, I was a Mass Effect person. I've had to come to the table of Dragon Age. Now it is my home too. But with Mass Effect, I felt like there wasn't, and this is too strong a word, but I felt like there wasn't a wrong way to play it per se. I felt that my playthroughs, however I did it, were canon, and if I replayed it, then that was, like, somehow the fiction. So there was, like, less, for me, less of a sense of consciously changing the way I play for the game world. Whereas with the Dragon Age games, I really feel consciously, like, if you don't play Inquisition as a mage, you're going to have a dramatically different emotional attachment to the game. Mm-hmm. And I genuinely think the first time I played Inquisition, even though I approached it the way I wanted to, I kind of played it wrong, quote-unquote, you know?
When I play through it, it's like either you can do that thing where you straight up, I, the player, am making this choice. What would I do in this situation?
Mm-hmm.
Or you can do what I think is a more interesting approach, and that's try to kind of create a character and stay true to those choices, even when it means that you're kind of a jerk or kind of like choose something directly opposite to what you would do.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to play like, you know, I'm playing this game and I'm me and, you know, I'm taking it very literally. Now I don't do that anymore. I straight up conceive of a character and then try to stick to that person's motivations throughout the entire game. And sometimes that means you just yell at people or whatever. like if you play a Dalish elf, and I did, when you yell at someone after you've like, well, let me back up a bit. The first time I played through, I played a human noble, and I just sort of chose all the nice options because he was just a nice dude. And the second time around, I played a Dalish character and just yelled at a lot of people, and it was really cathartic because, you know, you've been talked down to all this time, and it feels more in keeping with your character. Especially after Helam Sharal, where everyone's like looking down at you and being like, you know, check out this guy over here. So it's fun to sort of try and stay within those confines.
Yeah. I will say that I traditionally was I don't want to say thoughtless, that's an overstatement, but frankly, a thoughtless player in relationship to my characters. I wouldn't necessarily put that degree of effort into it. It was actually something that, a concept that y'all kind of introduced me, and to a lesser degree, my wife kind of challenged me on a little bit. I would traditionally tend to play kind of Boy Scout friendly characters because that is me. I'm kind of a friendly Boy Scout.
Mm-hmm.
And with Dragon Age 2, and I found it much easier to take on a character in Dragon Age 2 because Dragon Age 2, though this was greatly criticized, I think there is some power in playing a character who has a place in the world and where the world is built to react to that person and their position in it. I find there's a lot of interesting clarity to that. So Hawk is Hawk, and that was clear to me. In Dragon Age Inquisition, the first time I played, I was like, heck yeah, I'm going to be a Qunari. Are you kidding me? Look at all these sweet horn options. There's no way I'm not going to do this. So I was a Qunari rogue, and I found that to be a fascinating concept because the Qunari in this world are so treated as alien and other and have such a tight-knit culture and society that when you exit that, you have no place. You have no place in any other world because you're this big, scary creature and you are no longer welcome within your own culture. So you are, by definition, an outsider no matter where you go. So I thought out this whole character where I'm like, okay, well, she is this like kind of cynical, broken person who doesn't necessarily make connections and is going to have to come a great distance to get there. But playing someone who is, by their culture, by definition, kind of going to be a little more racist and kind of hesitant around magic users was not the best way to play that game, you know? It was interesting, but it kind of the whole game, there was kind of a distance to it, up to and including I play with my wife, and my wife was like, you're gonna press the lesbian button. I'm sorry, Annie, you're gonna press the lesbian button. So we wound up romancing Sarah, and Sarah is such an interesting character in that she's very, very hurt, very damaged person, and very easily upset. So you literally have to placate her and say exactly what you need. Oof. She needs to hear, whether you believe it or not, for her to stick around. Like, there are moments in the game where she's, like, straight up she'll just draw a line in the sand, like, you have to agree with me this or it's over. And so with my character, who is kind of like this distant person anyway, she was like, all right, I'm sure I'm going to fucking lie to your face. And wow. It was like really, it was really upsetting and interesting. It was really fascinating.
Yeah.
It was kind of a fascinating journey. But at the end of it, I felt like I had just played this cynical person who manipulated the situation until they were on top.
Yeah.
And it was really kind of upsetting.
Shame in video games. I guess it's something as a medium that games do really well because you make the choice, right?
Yeah.
It's on you, man.
But it was interesting because my second, I was trying to find my way to another character and I had heard that playing a mage was so powerful. So I re-rolled 8 or 9 times. And then just as a joke, I made a character named Geraldo. Wound up actually playing him, and then he kind of in the long run became my canon.
Yeah.
Inquisitor Geraldo the Herald.
That's one of the things that I've noticed is a lot of the gals what play it, and I'm just saying that because all my friends who are players or gals will play it once as like, you know, their intro round, and then the real canonical character is the second or third time they play it. that's definitely how it is for me. I feel like when I think back to it, like the way that I want to go into the next game, if there is another game, wink, would be like, you know, with my last Inquisitor as the one that's canonical, I suppose. You know, mm-hmm, the version that I played, the human dude with romancing Josie, was kind of like my, you know, first lap around.
Yeah.
Sorry, Hayden.
It's interesting that one thing that I like about the Dragon Age games is that there is a continuity between them. Obviously, they're set in the same world. Sometimes your character from the old games can pop up, either just in text or literally appear. I'm curious, Kate, did you play similar games, or excuse me, similar characters across the three games? Like, it sounds like you're kind of elf-oriented.
No, actually. I do like an elf. I did play a Dalish in the first one, but in the second one, I just played Hawk, the mage, Garrett Hawk as a mage, and I didn't even rename him because my approach to that game was just kind of anthropological. I knew that I wanted to play it, but like what I was talking about, like my first play through a game is never really, it's like drawing your first sketch. You know that it's not going to be your best work, so you kind of want to like, you know, just do it and feel it out. But normally when I choose characters, like, I'm all over the map. Like, you know, male or female or age difference or whatever. Yeah, normally, I mean, if given the option to play a mage, I'll play a mage. Because, like, I mean, they do this thing in Dragon Age where I know you're supposed to think, you know, there's gray areas for every single faction, every single group. But, I mean, I always sympathize with the mages. They just seem like they have it so bad. And I know that some mages are total jerks. As proven by Fenris's owner and some of the stuff in Dragon Age Inquisition, but I always just sympathize with them over the Templars because the Templars just seem like well-intentioned assholes.
Well, it's hard to say. You know who I really sympathize with? Those oppressors.
get out of here.
it's interesting. That's one of the core dichotomies of the world is this conflict between the magic havers and the magic not havers, to put it in the most
the muggles terms. And the yeah, exactly. I have noticed that they all switch around some of the, like, they'll like, so in one game, like, you know, you'll play a Grey Warden and you're like all heroic and, you know, Grey Wardens are viewed as very, you know, noble. And then they'll switch that around completely. And then two games later, Grey Wardens are just like the scum of the earth. That's fun. To kind of be able to take a character or a faction or something and just kind of like not be precious with it. Just sort of shake it apart. And like, I was making notes about this morning. And one of them, I was kind of remembering all the times when they take a character or, you know, like I say, like a special group and then just like flip it on its head. And it happens a lot. Like,
yeah.
Like, you can take, like, you can kill all of Meryl's clan, you can kill all of Clan Lavellan, you can, like, you can just do things to the world that are just, like, huge flips. So I'm kind of interested to see if they do another game, like, what are they going to flip on its head this time?
Yeah, what terrible consequences will you be able to visit upon this poor world?
Yeah, yeah, like who was once your friend is now going to be your enemy or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, other than the obvious.
One of the things that I love about, again, Annie's love of Dragon Age 2 comes marching in. This is a world of such extreme perspectives. What I really liked about Dragon Age 2 is that straight up it is being told by an unreliable and very biased narrator. And I found that really interesting. I love the idea of, no, this is a world where there are very clear lines in the sand drawn. And your perspective is going to warp. So, you know, in one moment, these people are the heroes. In another moment, they're the worst villains that I've ever been seen. Yeah. And I like that I like that there's no consistent good guy, bad guy. That coin is always being flipped, and you never know how it's going to fall, sometimes even over the course of a mission.
Did you ever watch the show HBO's Rome?
Yes, yes.
I remember watching that over a series of years, and it's like at the start, all the characters that I really abhorred and that I thought were awful people do that thing where, like, towards the end, they have completely switched and all the villains have become, you know, your favorites, and all your favorites are just, mm-hmm. like, monsters at this point. There's some of that in this, yep. I feel like.
Definitely. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's curious to see how they play with your sweet, sweet babies as you go along. But to go back to what I'd asked you about, like, your characters from game to game.
Yeah.
What I think is interesting is that I was thinking about this the other day. My canon characters across Origins 2 and Inquisition are a city elf warrior. Obviously, you can only be a human in 2, but a human rogue. And then a human mage in Inquisition. It's interesting the way the game kind of... I don't have any conclusion to that.
Well,
you know, I just was observing that generally. I don't know.
Well, let's hop forward then. Where do you want to go? Like, where is somewhere that's been mentioned in the lore or in the game or whatever that we haven't been that you want
to
go?
Man, we better go to Tevinter, right? Like, there's no way the next game isn't going to be Tevinter. Like, with all the stakes with the Okunari that have been slowly ramping up and, sure. like, all
they put
the...
that knife in the map, right?
Yeah, but even...
says Tevinter.
Well, yes, there was that literal indicator. Yeah. But like, emotionally, like, that is where the conflict between magic and non-magic is kind of, like, most... isn't present in the way that it is in the rest of the game. Like, mageocracy, right?
Yep.
And,
yep.
And it's not going very well for anyone over there except for the people on top.
Yeah.
It's something that the game has always talked about sneeringly, and I'm curious to actually go and see it, especially what we've seen of their culture and their architecture... Mm-hmm. And it should be a very, very different place. And to have the extreme of this magical oligarchy versus this religious fascism, like, smashing against each other will be really, really interesting.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you know what else? They talked up a good game in Inquisition about Weishaupt. I kind of want to see Weishaupt finally.
Yeah.
You know, the head of the Grey Wardens would be pretty interesting. But you know where I don't want to see, and I never want to see, and I hope we never, ever go, because it can never be as good as we've kind of imagined it, is the Black City. I don't remember. Do you remember the Black City? Yeah, it's this city that you can see from everywhere in the Fade, but you can never get to. And apparently that's where the corruption of the gods happened, et cetera, et cetera. But... I mean, it's this place you can always see, and I never want to visit it because I do environment work, and I can think about some of the problems that you would have making it, and I can think about some of the ways, maybe this is kind of sort of egotistical to say. I think I could have a good grasp on how you might go about, you know, designing it or making it or what concerns you may have, and I just don't, I always want it to be a mystery. I never want to have to, like, I never want to have to go through it and see some of those environment decisions, you know? I never want to have to see, like, the modular reuse of something, you know?
No, one of the kind of running themes of Dragon Age is there is this vaulted understanding of something, and then there's its grungy reality, you know? Where it's like, oh, the gods are this. It's like, well, no, the gods are probably actually this, we now learn. Or like, oh, this guy was, like, this unkillable beast. Well, we just killed him, because, you know. That's how we do. And, like, there's a lot of which is something I always find interesting, is, like, the when there is some sort of holy stricture or like legend that's just understood and shared that the reality is usually more messy and strange. But I think the flip side of that is that the way faith, I think, is sometimes handled in Dragon Age, I find it really interesting, but there is a horror in faith that I think a lot of media misses out on. Like, there is the terrifying unknowable should be terrifying and unknowable and ununderstandable and incomprehensible, and once you try to comprehend it or understand it, like, it becomes something different. And I hope that they, like, the Fade should be such a terrifying thing, but we've become so familiar with it and casual with it over the course of the games. It's not that anymore as much.
Yeah. It's like, oh man, the Fade. It's like, did you ever see that movie, The Descent, where they're all in the cave?
I have not seen it, but I know of it.
Yeah. Well, there's this cave where it's all stuck in a thing. Anyway, all these monsters are sort of harrying them, and you never see them, and you never see them, and finally you see them, and then the moment you see them, it's not scary anymore. Like, it takes away all of the, you know, the teeth of it.
Yeah, it's the whole mystery box thing, except, like, whereas that is an obnoxious route to it. Like, I think, you know, I've been thinking a lot about faith and media lately because, you know.
Yeah, your background.
Yeah, I was raised Catholic, and I've been watching Vikings, a TV show that my wife and I enjoy quite a bit, and its relationship with the faith is interesting in that whenever you are from the point of view of a different character of a different faith, their faith is real and physical and with them. So, like, you know, they will, you know, if you're inside a Christian's mind, maybe they'll have stigmata, or if you're inside one of the Vikings' minds, they'll see one of their idols weeping blood or something. It's always treated kind of creepily and with an air of disbelief, because that is, or excuse me, not disbelief, but with an air of awe. It's treated with an air of awe, and I find that really interesting and relatable, and that is, like, what faith is really interesting to me, because, like, a lot of Dragon Age is like, oh, I believed in this god, but whoop, 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 you know, then this, we're finding out this truth. But on the other hand, what I really loved about the end of, I think, as much as that sounded like I was being critical, I like these little moments of that we have seen in Dragon Age where, oh no, this is something intense and unknowable. Mm-hmm. Like what the heck is going on with all these elven gods that we now know are people, or some aspects of people. Or...
Sure. But you know what? Even though, like, Solas is just like, actually all the elven gods are just uppity dudes, right? Even though he's just like, you know, they're not gods. Part of me still like, but Andraste's a god, they're right. Like, I still want to believe, you know? It's just so silly. But because I really like
But that emotional attachment, what I like about Dragon Age is that once they get you drinking the Kool-Aid, you actually get really emotionally invested in these beliefs and in these expectations, and in a way that I find really fascinating.
Yeah, like, before I was like, yeah, I'm interested in the Elven Pantheon, and now I'm like, no, I want to know everything about them. I want to know who they, like, when you say that they were just mortals, like, I want to meet them. I want to meet the Elven Pantheon at this point, and I want to know just how rude and corrupted they were, you know?
Well, yeah, because, like, even just saying, oh, they were just mortals, I'm like, well, what are they? What, I mean, sure, they were, but they became something else.
Yeah.
Something very, very different. And what does that mean? And what does that entail? And if these mortals could do that, then what could others do, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm so excited for the possibility of more elf lore. I'm pumped. That's what I'm looking for.
I'm very excited for you.
Thank you very much.
I admit that I mostly like Dragon Age as a friendship simulator more than anything else.
Us and the friends.
Yeah, like, we touched on this a little bit with Overwatch too, but literally BioWare is really good at, if you choose to play it that way, so much of the game can literally be enriching your relationships with people. And that's one of the things that at first blush frustrated me with Dragon Age Inquisition, because there is so much of Dragon Age Inquisition and there are so many darn characters that I didn't always feel like they were given their fair shake in terms of their just a really meaty arc or a really upsetting romance, you know? And so, but and so much of that is in, like, comes from then, like, expanding it in your mind and reading into it. And, like, I realized that so much of Geraldo's relationship with Dorian.
Jesus
Christ. I know. I feel like an idiot saying it out loud, but he is my canon Inquisitor. So much of Geraldo's relationship with Dorian happened in between my ears and not even on the screen.
Yeah.
In a way that, you know, just because there's just so much to do in that darn game that there's just not much there.
Yeah.
But I didn't, and I felt the lack of it at first, but now it's just kind of all blended together in my memories of the game. Dragon Age is fascinating because I feel like they're trying to serve two masters. They're trying to serve the people who want a tactical, medieval-y fantasy gameplay experience, kind of in the vein of Baldur's Gate, right? That was like what their thesis was from the start.
I suppose, yeah.
And then there were the people who just want to kind of be told a good story and have these compelling characters that they have these emotional relationships with.
Yeah.
And seeing them toe that line and try to balance that has been kind of fascinating over the years. Like, I hate to keep bringing up Mass Effect, but like, Mass Effect is ultimately a shooter with kissing in it, you know, which is such a strange dichotomy.
It's nice.
I think Dragon Age manages that a lot better than Mass Effect does.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to actually playing Mass Effect. I've never played a Mass Effect before.
I love Mass Effect so much. We're going to have a whole thing about Mass Effect.
Yes, we will. I'm hopping on board to Mass Effect now just because I feel like it's a good place. It's a natural break, and I can kind of come in without being like, now who's Garrus? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, the Mass Effect games were were a trilogy that piggybacked one off the other. So all of their attempts to make it entry levelable were kind of doomed from the start. Whereas Dragon Age is so refreshing in that they are all their own isolated stories, and even as they're interwoven and connected, you really can go into any of them with no understanding of the world or its stakes and just kind of go for it.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know. I just really like these games a lot.
Yeah.
I think they might... I feel like every episode we have of this, I'm just going to say, this was my favorite game. But, I mean, I do feel like Dragon Age Inquisition quickly became my favorite game. And I spent, like, hundreds of hours
in it. Yeah, Dragon Age Inquisition was really interesting because I had way too high expectations of it.
Mm-hmm.
And there was the game I wanted it to be, and then there was the game it was. And at first, I was really angry that it wasn't the game that I wanted it to be.
That's the way it is with games, that I'm feeling like you see a lot of that when you put out something and people expect it to be something that it's not.
Exactly, yeah. Like, I was really shocked how, at first, how the character relationships and those character moments were, you know, they're all there, but like, when you focus on a character and you really grow to love one character and you really want to dig into the meat of their journey in this moment,
mm-hmm.
there's not a lot of there. Like, they don't necessarily have tremendously in-depth individual arcs, with the exception of Solas. You know, it's like you get to see these aspects of their journey and help them along, but it's really not so much about your individual relationships as much as it is like this council that you're building, these connections that you're making holistically. And that was really jarring to me, because what I really loved about Dragon Age 2 was that you're building this family and these people who are really important to you, and you get to see them grow and change over the period of years. And that was something that I'd never really seen, or to your point, like, not change, not grow.
Yeah.
Fenris is always angry, even if you give him the tenderest kisses all over his body.
Jesus.
But Inquisition's, the fact that the stakes are so high, and that ultimately there are things that are more important than your feelings for your friends, that was not necessarily what I wanted. And at first I found that very jarring. And like I said, my character was kind of cynical and distant. So when credits rolled, I was like, I don't know if I like this game.
Mm.
But when I went into it again and I accepted it what it was versus what I wanted it to be, I agree. It wound up becoming one of my favorites of all time.
So games, when you make them, are like this, you know, just a series of like picking your battles. If you were given the option,
mm-hmm.
let's say I'm a game developer and I'm making the next, you know, Dragon Age. I say to you, Annie, would you rather we have fewer companions with deeper storylines, or keep the amount of companions there are, and then, you know, the same amount of depth there? Which one would you go for?
Fewer, deeper, without any hesitation at
yeah,
all.
Yeah, you'd want more interaction and more, you know, moments with those characters.
Hands down. I want quality, not quantity. And I know that by definition that means that there's going to be a fewer flavors at the table.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that is amazing about Dragon Age Inquisition is whatever your angle is, there's something there for you. You know, it's like, if you want a sweet, sensitive romance, we've got that. If you want to be taken to Pound Town, we got that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, whatever your the angle is.
If you want
angle,
a sad dad, you got
exactly.
Yeah.
You want just a really angry punk girl who's not necessarily the brightest in the world? We got that for you too.
Sure. Yeah. Do you want to be told no constantly over and over and never actually have a relationship with that person? Got that. Actually, I really appreciated that. The first time around, I really I was like, I'm a human normal. I'm going to go over to Vivian and I'm going to romance her. And then she just shut me down. I was like, this is wonderful. It's so nice to just be completely shut out. Because it's, you know, as a player, you're used to getting your way, right?
Yeah.
At least in some regards. And to be told, like, sit down, it was great.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that I did not like and then really liked about the relationship with Dorian is that happily ever after is really relative. Like, it's like, no, there's not a lot of happily ever after here in that we don't get to live together happily. Like, I've got to go do this. You're off this. It would be politically, like, iffy if we had, like, any sort of more formalized relationship. So we're basically going to be Skype pals indefinitely. See ya, buddy.
Look, you get no sympathy from me because I romance both Anders and Solas. None.
Solas, you don't even get a postcard.
Nope. You get a sort of like a furrowed eyebrows and like a, you know, I'm really sorry, but bye. Anyway,
I fucking love Dragon Age.
Yeah,
we talk a lot about the relationships here and the romances here, but it's like those are nutrients that are missing in a lot of games, and Dragon Age has gotten a lot of flack for making relationships very binary, and you know, like. But to be able to have that kind of relationship with the character in a game is really interesting and meaningful.
Yeah, I like it a lot. And, you know, and I know that it's, and that, again, one of those things that, you know, maybe socially or culturally, you know, you're supposed to feel shame for it, but no, fuck it. I just really like BioWare romances.
And, like, the other reason why I would prefer to have a more focused roster is that one of my favorite things of Inquisition to some extent, but also especially with Dragon Age 2, was the way not only your relationships with the character change, but the way the character's relationships change with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Inquisition is, you know, known for, like, these little romances that happen between your characters if you don't intercept, like, you know, Dorian and Iron Bull and, like,
Josephine
and Blackwall. And, like, that's really great. But, like, one of my favorite arcs in any video game was in Dragon Age 2, where Isabella and Avalyn go from being, like, really hating each other to being, like, best friends forever.
Yeah. You know, one of the first incidences of, like, I remember what my wife was playing a really mean girl in Dragon Age Origins, and just like a total shithead. And if you're like that and you try to befriend Morrigan, you can become like the mean girls together. And it's like, like being like female friendship is, again, not something you run into in a lot of games in a way that is like, you know,
mm-hmm.
Bechdel passing. Or whatever you want to say, but like, you know, that to run into that and to just have it like happen organically,
yeah.
And you're both making fun of Alistair together, like that's like that's really rare. I like that.
It means so much, and I like so much that you in that game are building a family, and it's interconnected relationships. It's not just my relationship with you, mm-hmm. you know. And I feel like sometimes there's so much focus on that that it's at the loss of those, that network that you can build. Like, my perfect BioWare game, be it a Mass Effect or an Inquisition, would be, like, 5 party members tops. And there is as much effort put into those interpersonal relationships, good or bad, that you can, you know, manipulate one way or the other, that those are as fleshed out and meaningful as your individual relationship with any given character. And, you know, that to me would be the greatest thing of all time.
Yeah. I like that there's always one relationship that just can go positively, like, nuclear. Like, if you fuck up, like, Iron Bull's relationship.
Yeah.
And, you know, you kill all his family, I guess. It's all of his chargers. Then him at the end just betraying you. Or, like,
Yeah. But one of the nice things about Dragon Age is that there are actual stakes from moment to moment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's, like, I do like the dramatic left turns that these relationships can go. They're not afraid of breaking their toys.
Or, like, in Mass Effect, my wife was telling me, like, she made the wrong step with Tali, and Tali's entire civilization died.
We'll get into this in the Mass Effect episode, but the worst argument my wife and I ever had in our entire relationship, screaming, throwing things at each other, like,
holy smokes,
terrible things that we can never take back, were around a moral choice in Mass Effect around Tali.
Well, you're stronger now.
When I hatefully said, with my voice dripping with venom, whatever, I can just restore a save point, so whatever, it doesn't even matter. Sure, I'll do it your dumb way.
Oh, geez. Yeah, no, I like that you know that, like, going into, like, one of these games fresh, it's like, am I making the choice that gets everyone killed? Because it just yeah. lends the sense, like, yeah. terror to everything. Like, I mean, I was one step away from killing all of Clan Llewellyn for my Dalish, and, like, that's it. Your entire family's died. And then that's, like, it, if you play a Dalish, let's say you play a Dalish Inquisitor who romances Solas. If you kill your entire clan and then you lose all of your gods and then the Inquisition, like, shuts down, like, what do you have? What a bummer.
Dragon Age, more so than any other series I can think of, is not afraid to build and destroy a status quo over the course of the game.
Just puts the fear into you. Yep.
If you play Inquisition in all DLC, you can see, like, the Inquisition from start to its end, and whatever that means for you in your case, like, is really impactful and meaningful, both on the micro level and the macro level. That's pretty damn cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jeez, now I'm excited. I want to play the next one now.
I know. Is it time for new Dragon Age yet?
I know. I guess we'll have to just... We'll just have to play a new Mass Effect. Poor us.
Oh, boy. Okay, I'm not going to think about Mass Effect. I'm going to think about Dragon Age. Dragon Age is interesting in that the stakes are so real and the subject matter is so intense. Like, they're not messing around. This is about racial identity, national identity, religious identity. And the choices you make impact all those things, but I do really enjoy the choices you can't avoid.
Mm-hmm. Like what?
At the end of Dragon Age 2, where you have a dear friend who commits an act of terrorism,
you have to deal with that.
Exactly. Yeah. Or even to a smaller degree in Dragon Age 2. Hey, everybody, I really love Dragon Age 2. When your mom is going to die no matter what, you know, and it's just like, it's so interesting in games that are, games are usually about power and choice. And a lot of folks view it as, you know, what's the good ending, you know, how do I do it right so that everything turns out well? And, like, with Dragon Age, that just can't happen. Like, it's always going to go poorly to some degree or other.
Yeah, but I want that. Like, if I played a Dragon Age and I didn't get hurt somehow, like, it wouldn't be a Dragon Age, right?
Yeah.
If I didn't come away from it with, like, oh, My heart hurts.
That's one of the things that I love about Dragon Age is the stakes aren't just in the world. Like, they do a really good job of really digging in some sort of emotional stakes in the game. Like, I remember Dragon Age Origins. So, like I said, it kind of largely bounced off of me. I, along with every other heterosexual-leaning woman in the universe, romanced Alistair.
Sure.
And my big puppy dog boyfriend. And the end of that game where, you know, it's like, oh, gotta have him boink Morgan, I guess, and have some sort of weird baby. We gotta figure that out.
Yeah.
And, like, that was so genuinely upsetting to me.
That's delicious, though.
It is. It's so good.
Yeah. I like that. You can either die or you can have sex with this blood witch.
I love that you can just say that casually and be describing a video game that we love. Mm-hmm. It's so good. I think a lot about this in games where there are choices that aren't difficult, or even like gameplay mechanics that aren't difficult if you're not emotionally invested. Like, the example I think of all the time is in Heavy Rain.
Oh, sure.
There's a bit where you're trying to find your son and he's captured by this serial killer, and you're forced to crawl through this, it's so dumb, you're forced to crawl through like this tiny, tiny corridor that's lined with glass.
Yeah, I remember that.
And you literally have to crawl through this glass. And the first time I played it, like, it was so agonizing. Like, the gameplay itself is not difficult, but I was just emotionally invested enough that I was actually so uncomfortable playing this.
Yeah, and, or that room where it's like you have to choose how to cut off your thumb, and like there's like scissors,
yeah,
or there's a knife, and it's like the mechanic of it is just like, you know, press X to cut off your thumb.
No, exactly. I mean, to be fair, Heavy Rain is like the clumsiest, worst example of this. But I think a lot about these moments that aren't hard, but are only become hard if you get really emotionally invested in them. And Dragon Age is like a factory for those moments.
Yeah, when you see, like, when you get like a dialogue option and there's two options and you don't want to pick either of them, and you just sort of shut your eyes and just choose.
I'm so glad that Cass, that my dear best friend Cass, made it out okay. Like, I genuinely did. At the end of that game, I was so grateful, like, actually grateful that my dear pal, who was so idealistic and tried so hard and always did her best and tried to be open-minded, that she didn't get terribly mutilated or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was so genuinely grateful, because it's, like, Dragon Age is really good at these characters where you build this relationship with them, and I have just as strong an attachment to my friends as I do to my lovers, where, like, you know, these, like, Cass being, like, Pope meant so much to me.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, and her giving me, like, when you play the last DLC, when you play Trespasser, you have this really cute conversation where she's really worried about your love life and checking in on you that you're okay.
Yeah.
And it meant so much to me.
I'm not okay, Cass. No one's okay. Yeah. Or just like, even, you know, Cullen was there in Origins. He was there in all three, right? Just kind of see those characters kind of come along the ride, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that continuity, that constancy, that connection beyond just the obvious of having your character be the same, that this is a contiguous world.
Yeah, I want Varric along for the ride next time too. I mean, I don't know if he will.
Yeah.
I mean,
so we're gonna get Daddy Beardy Dorian, and I'm gonna die.
Yeah.
Who else do you think we'll get in the next game?
I kind of want a Meryl, but I want Meryl, like, because I feel like Meryl in the first game was a little bit doe-eyed, you know.
Yeah.
She's just a silly girl. But I want to see, like, dark Meryl. I want to see, like, elves are being torn apart Meryl. Elf culture.
Yeah, Meryl, I hated Meryl because she, again, seemed like everything I hated about elves. Like, she was just this manic pixie dream girl. And I'm like, I don't know. No. Get some teeth there, Meryl. Like, some real actual teeth. Like, Meryl having gone through everything that she's gone through and processed that would be really interesting. Much in the way that Liliana is such a dramatically different character from the first game to the last.
The first one, she's like, you know. Well, I guess I was going to say, the first one, she's like, I love shoes. But in the third one, she's also like, shoes are great, so.
They are, so.
Yeah, so I want to see who's next, because, I mean, Morrigan's changed a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, not much, but, you know, she's still kind of a know-it-all.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But I like that about her. I like that the growth of these characters across games, you know, they are still themselves in their heart, which is why, you know, I really want, like, to see, like, has Fenris grown and changed at all over the course of the games? Like, would he somehow be...
I hate to break this to you, but he died. I murdered
him. Well, that's what breaks my heart, is, like, if a character died in any given playthrough, I know that's it. I know they can only invest so much in bringing them back. Mm-hmm. Like, all the poor Alistair fans in the world, like, they got more out of Inquisition than they ever had any right to expect.
Yeah, sure. Surprise. Here's that. That's one of those choices where it's like, choose right or left. You know?
Yeah.
Make a choice.
Yeah, it's like, he's going to be a sad Grey Warden waiting for death. Or king.
Yep.
Here we go.
Yep. He's a king, though. Yeah. He's and happily ever after. I remember I was watching on Twitter when... someone was live tweeting about it on my Twitter feed, who was just kind of, you know, a big Alistair fan, and I feel like there was all these people watching them as they were live tweeting their way closer and closer to the scene, and they were just like, oh, Alistair's in it, you know, I love my Alistair, just watching this train wreck getting closer and closer. It's just this moment of just like on Twitter where they were just like the saddest tweets. Then they realize it's good. I hope I get one of those moments next time. Like, I hope. Like,
yeah.
Like, fuck me
How
up.
Are we going to be deeply upset?
Yeah.
I can't wait for sad, broken Dorian. Like, it's going to be good.
No.
Like, it's going to be, I love Dorian so much, and he's my sweet, sweet, sassy baby, and... I'm so proud of him for everything he's doing and the sacrifices that he's made, but that's going to take such a toll on him so quickly.
I don't want him to be sad and broken. I just want him to be like all business Dorian. I want him to, like, you know, roll up in sleeves.
Business Dorian. Yeah. I like this.
Yeah, he's like, let's do it.
I want receding hairline, full beard, getting it done Dorian, uh-huh. Playing the game,
uh-huh.
Breaking hearts. It's going to be good.
Sure. You and Geraldo.
Geraldo, his Skype boyfriend.
Yeah. Yep. His magical Skype boyfriend. I know this is going to be one of those things where I press stop recording and then I'm like, oh shit, this thing I, you know, love dearly.
Yeah. That's, and you know, this is such a big subject. There's so much to discuss about it. And like, we didn't touch on so much. Like, we were very high level on all of this,
mm-hmm.
but as much as we could, with the exception of our particular friends, which we dove very deep on.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just thinking about that, like, even in the very narrow view of you and I, like, we didn't mention like 3/4 of the characters in this game,
like
these games,
like,
you know?
Like,
well, like, we mentioned Blackwall once.
Oh, sure.
And, like, you know, what about Sten? Remember Sten?
Oh, yeah.
Or, like, what about all our various Mumbari pals? And, like, you know,
mm-hmm.
What the heck was the name of Ogden?
Yeah.
Like, remember Ogden? Or, let's see. Oh, what's the name of the magical dwarf kid who's really good at enchantments?
Sandal?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much of these games that are there that...
Oh, we didn't even talk about Cole at all. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Like, you know, it's like there's so much. This is such a rich, fun, enjoyable world that I just love to dive into.
Yeah.
And, you know, over time, I've realized that even the stories that aren't my sort of stories or the journeys that I might not be inclined to take, I really enjoy them, having come out the other side of them.
Yeah, yeah. You know what we'll do? I'll go to Portland. We'll go to the Sweet Hereafter. We'll get some vegan food. And Sweet Hereafters or something. Just, you know, get into it. All the stuff we missed.
There's a lot there in Dragon Age.
Yeah.
And I'm really, more so than any other game, it's a series that I want to see what changes they come up with next. It feels like it has this rich backbone of this world and story, and they're always playing up with gameplay, and they're always playing up with aesthetics, and... with your character roster and like the angle you come at it from, and I'm really excited to see what what new friends and what new angles I'm going to have next time around.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm more than anything, maybe more than any other game. I'm hopeful and excited for Dragon Age 4, because I know that, like, I mean, I'm going to be in there for hundreds of hours.
Yeah. How much time do you think you've spent playing Dragon Age, my friend?
You mean all of the games or just Inquisition?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't even know. You know, on Warcraft, they did this thing where you could type /played and it would tell you how many minutes, hours, days, weeks. Once I pressed my /played, and I don't want to have that experience ever again. So I would never want to know how many hours, how many hundreds of hours that I've devoted to at least Inquisition, because I played that game 2 or 3 times over and, like, got everything, every shard. Actually, every shard except for one, because there's one, I was playing my Dalish Inquisitor. There's one shard that you have to, like, desecrate a Dalish grave to go get the key to get. And I was, yes, like, you do. So that was the only shard in the entire game that I did not get, because I was like, well, she wouldn't do that. Like, she would climb onto a bunch of rocks over there, sure, and pick up this one, or she would, you know, but she's not going to do that.
Eh. I imagined Geralda the whole time doing that, just going, yeesh, like, just, like, feeling really visibly uncomfortable and, like, having to go take a nice bath afterwards.
You know, there's one other thing that I... Oh my god, now I'm studying a rant about elves. There was one moment where Vivian's like, I hate to...
Vivian, this is our first time mentioning Vivian, one of my best friends.
She was like, you know, I need you to do a favor for me. I need you to get the heart of a snowy wyvern. And she says to you, I know you're not a hunter, but I need you to go to do this. And that makes sense. Her saying that makes sense in the context of almost every single origin, except for the fact that I was a Dalish hunter when I rolled her. Like, canonically, when you roll a Dalish, you're a hunter. Like, it mentions it in your origin thing. Had I been, like, a noble or whatever, or a mage or a kunari or whatever, but that's, like, one of... Every now and then, when you have a game, like, this big with that many moving parts, you'll run into something that kind of, like... vibrates a little, and that was the moment for me that I was like, excuse you, Vivian?
Their spreadsheets failed you, Kate.
I mean, you know, there's so much, and it's so in-depth that, like, you know, I'm impressed that it doesn't happen more often, frankly, but...
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's one of the reasons why I love Dragon Age 2, is I love that purity of focus, and that purity of, like, where the looseness there becomes more just like how you play this character in this defined role. And I know that the backlash against Dragon Age 2 was so bad
among certain people, but then among other people were like, I fucking love this game, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it is, I think, even after having played Inquisition, I think Dragon Age 2 may still be my favorite. Just because I love the conceit, that conceit of being a person in a place and a time. Mm-hmm. I love the conceit of being in one city over time and seeing it change.
But
even
you
though
didn't
they did not
really
get a chance to do
see
it.
See it change that much. That was my that was my thing. It's like, I just wanted to see, like, I know, because, you know, I know the budgets and things. Like, it's really hard. It's really hard to make games. But I wanted to see, like, a clothing change, or, like, maybe, you know, something has been painted, or as time goes, to see something fall down or something be built.
I went like a Dragon Age 2 with the budget and time of a Dragon Age Inquisition.
Jeez Louise, yeah. That'd be fun. Everyone gets more stubble. Everyone just gets gray. Oh, that was my puppy.
Wyeth agrees. But, like, I love, as a conceit, like, Dragon Age is so about a real world that is changing in real time. I love the idea of seeing your choices having a physical, tangible impact on people, mm-hmm. on places, and getting to see that over time. That is one of those things that gives me goosebumps in video games that do it well. And that is something that is so hard to do, because you have to give yourself the resources to basically recreate the same place and same characters multiple times. Yeah. And in some ways, potentially ways that some players will never see. And like in Dragon, in Dishonored 2, they do that in, like, multiple different ways. Like, you literally go to some environments at different points in time. And there's one environment where you can technically see it in from three different points of view, like in three different times or realities. Wow. And I was just sitting, I had to put my controller down and clap like a seal, because it's like something that I personally find so fascinating. Yeah. And in a game that's so much about consequences and stakes and that, like, I want to see it on the macro, on the micro level, on the very emotional, intimate level. And I worry that Dragon Age, as it pushes grander and broader, as much as it's exciting to see so many different perspectives and worlds, like, I want to see that real, real personal change and impact. And I find that so much more interesting than save the world. Like, saving my family means so much more to me than saving the country.
I would wager that they know that. I would. You know what? Put your faith in these folks. You know, I would, they probably hear that stuff quite a bit. I bet they know how important it is to have characters and, you know, to see them change. So, you know, sometimes you have your hands tied, but I'm sure. Until.
And I mean, even like we were saying, over the course of Inquisition, like, depending on how you interact with your characters, they can be dramatically different people at the end than they were at the start.
Yep. Yes, they can. They can be completely indifferent to you, or just like completely. Like, you know, like I did manage to arrive from Aunt Isabella, but if I hadn't managed to, she would just be gone. So, yeah.
Oh man, Isabella. Now I'm just gonna sit here and think about Isabella for a second.
Mm-hmm. Pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. Isabella, have you had any characters? I'm sorry, I know we're trying to wrap this up, but have you had characters in Dragon Age where you see them maybe like in concept or in video, and you're like either like, you know, forget them, that's not gonna happen, and then they're your best friend, and or the opposite, where you're like, yeah, this is for me. Mm-hmm. And then you get there and you're like, nope.
Yeah, I saw some like a really nice hunky Matt Rhodes drawing of Blackwall and like he's like walking away from the gallows, and I was like, this man is a good looking man. And then I started playing it, and he was just so sad all the time. I couldn't get on board. You know, it was good in a different way, but also like just different than I'd expected.
Yeah, yeah, the same. I really wanted to be really into Blackwall, and I do like aspects of him, but one thing that I find really funny about him is that he is like this dude who's trying to do right by the sins of his past, but he's also kind of a shitty goofball. Mm-hmm. At the same time. Mm-hmm. Like his really childish conversations with Sarah, and his frankly sometimes kind of childish perspective on the world is so unexpected.
Yeah. No, it's fun. I like that. I like having my expectations sort of upended.
Yeah, or like Isabella is another example where I saw her art and I was like, oh my god, this is like the most transparent, like pandering to dudes, like give her some pants, you know, like that kind of reaction. And whereas now she's actually one of my favorite characters in all of Dragon Age.
Yeah.
Definitely one of my favorite romances, and I would protect her with my life.
Yeah, because she's very sexy, but she's also like really unappealing sometimes.
Yes, and I find that so fascinating.
Yeah. She's a dirty girl. I like how that she's like swimming with disease.
It's just like, you know, Dragon Age is so funny. I have these expectations of how I'm going to react to it and how I'm going to interact with it and how I'm going to digest it and how I'm going to, you know, how it's going to stay with me. And then it just upsets the apple cart. And on the other side of it, I am so grateful and had such a good time, and almost always in a way that I never anticipated in a million years.
Yeah, same. Looking forward to it happening again.
Oh, friends. I wish we lived in the time of expansion packs, because, like, The wait between like Fallout 3 and Fallout 4 was made so much better by Fallout New Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about that. I'm like, man, what if we could just have like their like B team do some really meaty, like a meaty standalone with the same engine and with a lot of the same assets, and just let that tide us over until the next one comes along.
Well, we had three.
It's true. I mean, there's lots of, and there's a lot of DLC. They're so good about making really, really rich, really rich DLC that's really meaningful. How do you feel about the Dragon Age policy of putting really important character moments and really important plot points in the DLC rather than the core game?
Great. Do it. I'm going to buy them all.
Well, I am too. Don't get me wrong. I think it's a really interesting policy. This is I struggle with the idea of it being presented as ostensibly optional content when it is really mandatory.
You mean Trespasser?
Well, Trespasser, but even to some degree, like the DLC for 2, where they introduce Corypheus, is like pretty big stuff leading into the second game, and that made the arrival of Corypheus in Inquisition and that character mean a little more to me because I had this context for him.
Yeah, I didn't actually play that once, but my wife told me about it, so.
So you may as well have.
Yeah, exactly. I got a dramatic retelling.
But, like, there are people in this world who have played Dragon Age and never, ever got around to Trespasser. You know?
Yeah. I mean, maybe they play it for different reasons.
This is true. And I will say this, you don't need... Like, you could play Dragon Age Inquisition and have a perfectly fine time without playing Trespasser, and I think Trespasser is stronger for being treated like an epilogue versus part of the core experience. Mm-hmm. I like that idea of that approach to story, of having it... seeing these consequences of your choices in a different light. I find that very interesting. But yeah, mostly, maybe I'm just sad at the thought of people not playing it. Maybe the thought of someone playing, like, Descent and being like... Forget this DLC and like bouncing.
Yeah. Well, Descent was hard.
Descent was, I don't think I, that is the one piece of Dragon Age Inquisition I never got around to beating.
It's tough.
Because I'm done with the deep roads for the rest of my life.
I realized something, and I think like every time I go into the deep roads, whether it's in 2 or 3 or whatever, I feel sad. And like,
yeah.
It's just when at the end of the Descent, when you sort of see sunlight again, I was just, it's yeah. Like, it's actually like, you know, seasonal affective disorder. Like that kind of sad. It's hard. It's so oppressive, and like you feel like the literal weight of the world above you. It's claustrophobic and strange to be in the deep roads. It's a hard place to be.
Absolutely. And that you see like these like so much of Dragon Age is built off the bones of broken things that came before, but the deep roads in particular are just like these you're literally wandering through these, you know, dead chambers of something that no longer is there, that's like now instead infected with something new, and it's so upsetting.
Yeah When I was done it, I was like, phew, yeah. Go back to the surface. I don't blame you, Varric. It does suck down here. I mean, like, it's not because I'm like, I'm not like saying anything into the level design or the craft or anything. No. It's like I couldn't play Fallout because it was so sad of a world that I just felt sad, like,
sure,
you know, depressed because everything was ruined. Like, they did their jobs too well, if anything.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, Dragon Age, the beating, like the world of Dragon Age is one where things, terrible things are going down and you're going to be consumed at any given moment. But despite that, there is a thread of optimism and hope to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's always about rallying together and moving forward,
mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes in weird, upsetting ways, like let's lock up all the mages, and sometimes in a hopeful way. But always there is a sense of moving forward and trying to combat what is happening. And trying to leave the world in a different way than when you first met it, you know?
Yeah, I want to go back there again.
Yeah, let's play more Dragon Age. BioWare, we're ready for Dragon Age
4. No, I might just play 3 again.
Oh, yeah.
I might put I might get into the 300 or 400 hour mark and just...
Well, okay, I'll be honest, because I've looked at my numbers. I think even though I didn't like Origins as much... I think I played about, I got about 80 to 100 hours in Origins.
Mm-hmm.
I probably played 80 to 150 hours on both of my playthroughs of Dragon Age 2. And Inquisition, God, I probably got into about the 400-hour range across my playthroughs. There's no way I did
it. Yeah, sure.
Because Geraldo was at 250 hours, and Zaladar, my Kunari, she was at 120 hours. So I have done my time in the World of Dragon Age.
Yeah, sure. Well, I might just go Romance Souls.
Man, I really would have played Dragon Age 2. Where my Xbox at? Yeah. I gotta make this happen.
But what have we done to ourselves? Anyway, let's get out of here.
Kate, thank you so much for joining me today in this meandering talk about Dragon Age and our feelings around it.
Yeah, fans of Dragon Age.
Pro. In summation, pro Dragon Age.
And, well, probably everything we're going to talk about, like, podcast-wise, we're pro about. Otherwise, we wouldn't talk about it. We feel strong enough about it to talk for an hour at least.
So thank you, BioWare, for making this world that has been fun as heck to traipse around in and follows us in the most delightful ways.
Money, kiss, folks.
Thank you for these elaborate kissing simulators. I look forward to your future kissing innovations.
Pretty good.